This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If a baby chimp was raised like a human baby, could it be taught sign language and then learn to use words in a sentence and communicate like a human child? That's the question Columbia University psychology professor Herb Terrace set out to answer when he launched his now famous and controversial experiment with a baby chimp named Nim in 1973. That experiment and its surprising and disturbing consequences is the subject of the new documentary, Project Nim. Nim was born at a primate research facility and taken away from his mother when he was 2 weeks old. Professor Terrace gave him to his former student, Stephanie Lafarge, and assigned her to raise him as if he were her own baby and teach him to sign. Nim lived with Lafarge, her second husband, and their combined family of 7 children in a brownstone on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Over the course of 5 years, Nim had a couple of other surrogate mothers and several researchers working with him, was moved to an estate owned by the university, and learned about 120 signs. But as he grew, he became more aggressive and sexual, and the study was terminated. Nim was sent back to the primate research facility, then to a center that used chimps for medical experiments, and finally to an animal refuge. Later, we'll hear from Stephanie Lafarge's daughter, Jenny Lee, who was 13 when Nim moved in with her family, and Bob Ingersoll, who became Nim's friend and advocate when the experiment ended. Our first guest is the director of the documentary Project Nim, James Marsh. He also directed Man on Wire. Project Nim combines film documenting the original experiment along with new interviews. In this clip, Stephanie Lafarge describes how she raised Nim like her own baby. She even breastfed him, and the impact this had on her husband, Weir. The second voice you'll hear is Lafarge's daughter, Jenny.
I breastfed him for a couple of months. It seemed completely natural. Everything was about treating him like a human being. By the time I had Nim, of course, I felt very comfortable with babies. I wasn't prepared at all for the wild animal in him. And the drive. By the time he was 3 months old, I think, and starting to be ambulatory, he was just right there, nothing passive ever.
You know, I think he figured that he could just get in between Weir and Stephanie. On some level. And Weir put his arm around her, and Nim just, you know, half asleep, having a bottle, you know, turned and bit Weir on the arm quite hard. He didn't want Weir in the picture. He wanted Stephanie all for, you know, himself.
Weir definitely felt excluded. Nim had just become part of my being. That was incompatible with the role that I played as wife.
It's an excerpt of Project Nim. My guest is director James Marsh. Welcome to Fresh Air. There's so many fascinating things about the movie. You have the scientific part. Can a chimp learn sign language? But you also have a part that's alluded to in the clip that we heard in terms of trying to raise a chimp as a human. But as the chimp grows, he gets more aggressive. The animal in him emerges more fully, and no one seems prepared for that because they know nothing about chimps. The family that's raising him has no experience with chimps or sign language.
The premise of the experiment was to give him the nurturing of a human child in order that he might then behave like one. And it was quite striking that there wasn't a great deal of investigation as to what chimpanzees actually were, or what they're like, essentially. And there's a pattern to chimpanzees' behavior that's really quite well established and quite well known. And the wild animal in him comes out very quickly, and Stephanie wasn't prepared for that, that within 3 months he was basically climbing the walls. And very quickly he begins to try and establish dominance over the males in the household, which again is a hardwired kind of behavior.
Because things are so kind of chaotic and out of control in the first household in Manhattan where Nim is raised, and they're giving him alcohol and marijuana, they're not keeping scientific logs of the progress that they're making with the sign language, the professor who's running the experiment moves Nim to a more laboratory setting, and then moves him again to a big estate in the country that's owned by Columbia University, so that Nim can have more room to run around in and be a chimp in. So people who are more scientific in their approach start to take over and teach him sign language, but Nim keeps getting more aggressive.
I think the paradox is that you know, we're asking, in this case, a series of women to be mothers to him and also to be scientists. And that's quite a contradictory thing to be, in a way. You know, you're asking Stephanie and then Laura and Petito to nurture him like a child, which involves quite complicated emotional kind of interactions between you and the chimpanzee. And then also you're asking them to be detached and to, you know, observe him as a scientific project. And that's almost destined to be tense and in conflict. And as you say, his wild behavior becomes more and more, as he gets bigger, of course, really quite dangerous to some other people. And this causes, you know, a whole set of new problems for the people involved in the experiment. And it's extraordinary, too, that he has the most privileged upbringing imaginable. He's on the Upper West Side in a beautiful brownstone. Then he goes to this amazing mansion with beautiful gardens and grounds around it, and has all this. You can't imagine this happening now. So he has a, you know, very privileged upbringing on one level, but in a sense he's shunted from parent to parent. He has a very dysfunctional upbringing, both for a child and indeed for a chimpanzee.
Give us a brief idea of what this experiment was designed to prove.
Well, the simple premise of it is, can a chimpanzee construct a sentence? And that sounds like a very simple idea. But what it means is, can a chimpanzee be endlessly creative and inventive with a language that we give them, i.e. human language? And if so, then can we find out what the chimpanzee is feeling and how he sees the world? Which is a mind-boggling idea. It's like speaking to an alien from out of space. You know, we get a completely new and fresh view of the world through a chimpanzee. So it's a fantastically ambitious project in that respect. Of course, the way it plays out isn't quite up to those wilder ambitions.
One of the problems that Nim posed for the men and women who were taking care of him, falling in love with him, and doing the scientific study about whether a chimp can be taught to communicate with language, was that Nim became very sexual, as chimps do, and did a lot of really inappropriate things. I mean, like, Nim really loved cats, but he'd put a cat on his lap and use it to sexually arouse himself. I mean, just to, like, rub himself. And
well, it was probably a bit more than that, to be honest with you.
Really?
Indeed. But of course, you know, that then speaks of, you know, his wild animal behavior, and he has no inhibitions. And one of the things we're trying to do is inhibit him in certain ways, inhibit his aggression. In this case, inhibit these perfectly natural sexual urges he has as an adolescent, which in the film play out quite comically. You see him, you know, with a cat, you see him with a rock, you see him actually with some of the females involved, the women involved in the experiment, you know, trying it on with them. But in a sense, you know, that speaks of his deeper confusion. He doesn't have any contact with, he doesn't know what chimpanzees are. He's not had any contact with chimpanzees the moment he was born. And therefore, where do these urges go? And they go to, you know, to these, what we would say, inappropriate kind of objects and creatures and people, and he has no proper outlet for them. So it's both funny and also a little bit, you know, revealing and sad. Essentially, it's his circumstances that are strange, not his behavior, which is worth pointing out. It's actually, he's not in the wild, and he's not even amongst other chimpanzees. These are very unusual and strange circumstances for him, so we may find his behavior in them odd, but in fact it's perfectly natural to him to behave that way, given the strangeness of where he actually is.
You know, we were talking about how aggressive Nim could be because it's his instinct to be dominant and to express himself that way. And this posed a real problem for the researchers who loved him and were trying to be a surrogate family for him. One of the women working with him was bit really badly. I mean, they'd all been bit, I think, you know, on the arm or leg or something, but this was a terrible incident. So we were going to play a clip from the film Project Nim, in which Renee Fallets, who was helping to teach him sign language, was basically attacked by Nim while she was getting Nim from one of the other researchers in what's called a body transfer. First, we'll hear from Renee Fallets, who was attacked by Nim, from a fellow researcher on Project Nim, Bill Tynan, and then we'll hear from Professor Herb Terrace, the linguist who was running the experiment.
It was the end of July. It was July 28th. And Bill had him, and we did the body-to-body transfer.
I mean, you're holding Nim, and the other person comes up, and you just kind of hand the chimp to the other person.
And I said, come on. And I got the tether. You know, you've got the loop first, and I then tied it to my belt. Come here. And he came over, and he put his arms around me. He just crunched my face.
It just happened.
Grabbed Nim and just dragged him into the house. And he was like, oh, sorry. No. And I passed that arm over with that mirror and saw all this blood. He had bit through my cheek, almost to the inside of my mouth. It was folded over so you could see inside my face.
I don't recall if she went to the emergency room, but I think that something like that happened.
It was just bad.
I was probably worried that you would sue me, or this would become public knowledge about how life-threatening the project might be.
They couldn't sew it because of the infection and a risk of infection. So I had an open, gaping wound on my face for 3 months. And when I got out of the hospital, I said, you know, I want to see Nim. He went, ooh, and he went to reach for my face again. I went, well, that's it. I don't need closure now. I'm out of here. I was scared.
So that's an excerpt of Project Nim, directed by my guest, James Marsh. You know, it's interesting in the scene that we just heard that the woman who is attacked, she leaves after that. I mean, she's done. But the professor who started the experiment, his reaction is, am I going to be sued? What does this mean for the experiment? Maybe it's the way you edited it. I don't know. But he seems less concerned about her face and the damage and the damage that his experiment is causing. Did he end the experiment after this incident?
Quite soon after he did. And again, I didn't edit that to create that impression. That's exactly what he could barely recall what actually had happened to Renee, but he could recall the complications it might create for him as a scientist. And he's a scientist after all, and he's about, you know, rationality and data and objectivity. So perhaps, you know, one could excuse the lack of compassion, if you like, on that, you know, scientific kind of mentality. But I was quite struck by his inability to understand that someone had been very badly hurt. A young woman had her face, ripped off, essentially. And so I was quite surprised at that and wanted to convey that in the film as a sort of revealing part of his character, perhaps.
Her face looks fine in the movie. Is she disfigured, or are you just not showing that part of her face, or did she heal that well?
She healed well, and she was young, and that was very helpful. You know, for a year she was going in and out of hospital, having, you know, reconstruction on her face, and generally it was, you know, a pretty sad thing to happen to a young woman in her early 20s.
The point of the scientific study of Nim was to see whether he could acquire language. But your film, I think, is much more about what nature is, what a chimp's nature is, what human nature is. And I found myself really thinking throughout this film, well, if Nim is constantly expressing his innate chimp nature, in spite of the fact that he's being raised as a human in a Manhattan brownstone and in a beautiful estate in the New York countryside, then what does it say about human nature? What's innate in us?
That was, for me, one of the appeals of the story was that you felt like you were dealing with primate behavior across two species of primate, you know, ourselves and the chimpanzee. And, you know, chimpanzees have a very rigorous sort of structure in their hierarchy and they have a dominance culture, as we've talked about. And it seems that we have some of those too. What you have in the experiment is a very powerful alpha male type human being and women who are kind of doing his bidding.
The alpha male being the professor overseeing the experiment, who I might add here, it seems from your film, if I'm getting this right, that he had sexual relationships at one point or another with two of the women who were the researchers and surrogate mothers.
Indeed, that seems to be established by the film. And that also is part of the behavior that's going on, if you like, around Nim's chimpanzee behavior. And you're seeing all kinds of, you know, versions of our human behavior flushed out by our, you know, attempt to nurture Nim. And so you're seeing, you know, some of our sexual practices and sexual behavior. You're seeing human power structures. You're also seeing ideas about ownership and all that kind of other interesting, you know, human selfishness as well. And I think also some very good qualities of people, that Nim has some steadfast allies and friends in the human world who indeed, you know, make sacrifices to try and make his life better. So it's not all a sort of misanthropic portrait of human beings. It's actually, you know, the great variety of our behavior is sort of all available in that story. And it felt to me that as I was making the film, it became a study as much of the humans as it was of the chimpanzee. And in fact, I can know more about the humans because, you know, I was very wary of trying to project human emotions onto the chimpanzee. That felt like part of the problem of Project Nim. And indeed, Nim's life was played out a certain way because we projected things onto him, and I was determined not to do that in the film. And therefore, I guess I can be more sure, perhaps, about some of the human behaviors than I can about the chimpanzee behaviors.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your film.
It's been a pleasure.
James Marsh directed the new documentary Project Nim,